The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Hey, good afternoon and welcome, ladies and gentlemen. This is Gino Geraci. So glad you could join me on the program, Crosswalk with Gino Geraci. It is, of course, the program where we typically take your calls and answer your questions about the things you care the most about. We talk about the Bible. We talk about worldviews. We talk about, well, world religions. We talk about history and prophecy and, of course, we're here to take your questions. And on Tuesdays, we've sort of set aside Tuesdays to be what we call Tough Question Tuesday. That's the opportunity for you to ask me the really hard questions about the Bible. But that doesn't mean I'm going to know the answer. But you are welcome and invited to ask the really hard questions. So are there hard questions about the Bible that I do not know the answer to? Well, the answer is yes. There's lots of questions that I do not know the answer to. But God in his grace and his mercy has given me a wonderful privilege of being a Bible teacher. And for the past almost 40 years now, I've taught the Bible regularly in a number of different venues. And so if you'd like to join me on the program, it's 303-873-1935. A lot going on in the news, including the special prosecutor who was tasked with evaluating the claims that President Biden inappropriately took classified documents to his public house, came out with a report that he basically found the president that he chose not to order him for trial because he thought that he would lose the trial. And this puts the president in a very difficult situation in the sense of that the president has memory lapses and memory loss, and that any real jury would find him not guilty by reason of incompetence. So the president is in a very difficult situation. If the person finds him able to stand trial, well, then he stands trial. If the person finds him unable to stand trial, then it results in the outrage among conservatives of, then why is he still president? 303-873-1935. This isn't the only political news in the headlines today. Just very quickly, Republican Representative Ken Buck announced today that he was going to resign from Congress. Apparently, he's given his what some people are calling 2-week notice, but he offered no explanation. Others are reporting that he says he was just deeply disappointed and disillusioned in the Republican Party and that he didn't want to run again. So he there's a number of different things that are going on as a result of that. Usually vacancies are filled through a series of activities that take place where in a United States Senate or I think a congressional district, the governor appoints his replacement. But it's my understanding that they're going to have a special election in the 4th district. And, of course, Ken Buck has been in the 4th district for about 9 years. And according to news outlets that he posted on the social media platform X, he basically said, quote, "It's been an honor to serve the people of Colorado's 4th District in Congress for the past 9 years. I want to thank them for their support and encouragement throughout the years. And, of course, Congressman Buck is 65 years old. He said, quote, "Today I am announcing that I will depart Congress at the end of next week." So this Friday, a week from this Friday, he said, "I look forward to staying involved in our political process as well as spending more time in Colorado with my family." So it looks like the 4th Congressional District is going to warm up. And so apparently there's a number of different people who have expressed interest in the seat, including current Republican Congresswoman Lauren Boebert, who currently resides in the 3rd Congressional District. And so there's a number of other candidates who are running in that district, including Deb Flora. And I hope to have her on the program in the not too distant future.
Hey, Gino.
Yeah.
Just a quick correction. Lauren Boebert has actually moved to CD4. She lives now in Windsor, Colorado.
Okay. Thank you for correcting
me. Yes,
sir. So she is not. So she is a current resident in the 4th District. I did not know that. So she's officially moved from the 3rd District into the 4th District. Thanks for that update, and thanks for correcting me. One of the other things that news agencies are reporting is that House Republicans began the current session with a slim majority, but when Ken Buck retires next week, it's going to go down to 218 seats to the Democrats, 213 seats, according to NBC News. And so House Republicans voted last December to expel former Congressman George Santos of New York, which further reduced their ranks. And former House Speaker Kevin McCarthy resigned weeks later. Former Representative Bill Johnson of Ohio both resigned just 3 weeks into 2024. And so, interesting. 303-873-1935 is my number if you want to join me on the program. 303-873-1935. One of the things that was also interesting in the news was I'm fond of referring to Jim Dennison's postings that he does for both Christian Headlines and for the Dennison Forum. And today he talked about something I thought really interesting, where he's talking about extremism or radicalism. And he basically makes this comment in his headline, "Religion is dangerous, but not because we're too radical." He basically says we're not radical enough. In other words, what he's basically pointing out is that perhaps if Christians start living the gospel, if their lives begin to reflect the radical transformation that comes when you are a Christ follower, if you actually begin to embrace the commands that are given to believers. And I have an alphabetical order command that's given in the New Testament. And as I'm looking at them, there's 127. And I might give you some of these commands that are listed throughout the New Testament about what believers are supposed to do. And I think there's a reason why they're called commands. So what Jim Dennison is pointing out is that the transformation of America should begin with the transformation of people who claim that they're Bible-believing Christians. This is Gino Geraci. Numbers 303-873-1935. Thanks for joining me. Hey, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. The number is 303-873-1935 on this Tough Question Tuesday. If you'd like to join me on the program, 303-873-1935. Let's see who's up. Chris, welcome to the program.
Hi, Gino. I just want to, first of all, thank you. You've been extremely instrumental in my wife and my journey to Christ. So I want to thank you for that. And I just wanted to share a story with you, maybe off topic a little bit. But okay. When I was a kid, my dad died when I was 12, and my mom was a pretty faithful Catholic. I was brought up Catholic. Mm-hmm. And she had told me at that point in my life that she taught me the difference between right and wrong, and that she can do no more for me. But she would always be there to bail me out when if I ever went to jail, which thank God I didn't. But I, you know, what's interesting is, and I grew up here in Denver in the 60s and 70s, and at the end of the 70s, beginning of the 80s, she told me that she wouldn't see Jesus in her lifetime, but I might very well see him in my lifetime, which, you know, I was in my early 20s, I didn't think a whole lot about it, but as I've aged, I'm 65 now, I look around and it was some of the things she had told me, which kind of stuck, was that Satan was going to be in his final 100 years here on earth. And he would exponentially speed things up the more my life developed into my later years. And I look around me now and I think back on that time and I think, oh my gosh, I'm actually living it. And again, thank you. I'm not, you know, I know this didn't have anything to do with what you were talking about, but
in a way it has everything to do with what we're talking about, because in my view, we're going somewhere. We're going into a future where Jesus returns. And so, yeah. Oddly enough, so as we're looking around at our country and its woes, we look around at the world and its woes, we see a trajectory that I think is going to be headed towards a world government. I can't believe that the prophetic things that are spoken of in the Bible cannot unfold unless there is a global governance of some sort. So to your point, what, you know, and I want to just be very clear, because I'm not for date setting and date suggesting. So do I believe that the coming of Jesus is soon and very soon? The Bible gives us permission to use those words. Yeah. Will it be 100 years? Or less? I hope so. Could it be 100 years or more? It could be.
Yes.
That's why we don't know. You know, 1 Thessalonians 5, you yourselves know full well that the day of the Lord will come like a thief in the night. But you, brethren, are in darkness, that the day should overtake you like a thief, for you're the sons of light and sons of day. We're not of the night or darkness, so let us not sleep as others do. Let us be alert and sober. So we're given permission to be alert, sober, watchful, and even enthusiastic about the coming of Jesus.
Yes.
And so, you know, for people who go, oh, you Christians, you know, always talking about Jesus and him coming back, you know, and I think of a song when I was a teenager in high school. The song went, the master went away from us 2,000 years ago. He left us with his promise to return. How our hearts do long for him. We miss the master so. We must keep the faith and let the fire burn. So the way that, to me, this is the antidote to despair over the disintegration of our culture. So there's a couple of ways of thinking about it. There are those people who say, you know what, I want to postpone the disintegration of our culture. And I go, well, that's not a bad idea. If we can postpone the disintegration of our culture, I wonder if we're going to postpone, well, judgment. Now,
So that goes to the heart of what the scriptures also say, that Jesus isn't slack concerning his promise about his return, but he wants people to be saved. He wants people saved. Like, again, in your call, it sounds to me like there was a time when you didn't have a right relationship with God in Christ, and then that changed.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And the best part of it all is it's given me extreme hope in my future that I'll be retiring soon. And I can wait for Jesus because I'm fulfilled to the point where I'm going to enjoy the rest of my life. And whether he comes in my time while I'm here on earth or not, it's changed me dramatically. And I have this outlook that's just unbelievable. I'm just so looking forward to the future, even being an old guy. And anyway, I just wanted to share that with you, and I want to thank you for all you've done.
Thank you for your call. And I love these calls because it takes me on a path. Because I actually love talking about Jesus' return. Thank you for your call.
Absolutely. You bet. Have a great rest of the day.
303-873-1935. That's the number on Tough Question Tuesday. And producer Jim, again, as calls will take us, I'm thinking of a statement that Dave Reagan, he came and spoke at Calvary South Denver many, many years ago. But he had a little article on 50 reasons why he thought Jesus was coming soon. And in that article, he talked about a man named Albert Peake. And he talked about a Bible prophecy conference that was held in Orlando, Florida in the early 1990s. And he said in those early 1990s, so this is about, can you believe it, about 30 years ago. At that time, Mr. Albert Peake was about 80 years old. And he had been assigned the topic, The Signs of the Times. And he began his presentation by saying, 60 years ago, when I first started preaching, you had to scratch around like a chicken to find one sign of the Lord's return. And then he paused and he said, but today there are so many signs that I'm no longer looking for a sign. I'm listening for a sound, the sound of a trumpet. I always was impressed with that. I've used it. So it's time to give credit where credit is due. Dave Reagan, thank you. And Albert Peake, if you're still on the planet Earth, thank you. 303-873-1935. That's the number. I've sort of drifted from the topic that I was talking about, and I want to get back to it from Jim Dennison's article. And he was talking about changing, that religion is dangerous. And I love that idea. Religion is dangerous. In what way is it dangerous? And according to Jim Dennison, it's dangerous if you actually do what the Bible says, if you live your life in light of the fact that Jesus is real and that he's coming soon. And basically he says, and I quoted him earlier, that the transformation of America has to begin with the transformation of America's Christians. This seems to be consistent with what I've been talking about for the past several days from the American Worldview Inventory by George Barna, where he basically says, I believe Americans have lost the capacity to develop a unified perspective on who America is and how we're going to go forward together. He's calling for not a political transformation, but a spiritual transformation. Is that even possible? I think so. Hey, welcome back to Tough Question Tuesday. Would love to hear from you. 303 303-873-1935. And I was looking at some old questions about the Lake of Fire, but I don't think I want to talk about the Lake of Fire. Although I'm happy to take your call if you really want me to. 303-873-1935. I was talking about Jim Dennison's daily article that is posted at ChristianHeadlines.com and also at the Dennison Forum. And basically he made the statement, and I agree with him, that the transformation of America has to begin with the transformation of Bible-believing Christians, with America's Christians. He basically says, and I'm quoting him, "We must prove that biblical morality is relevant today by demonstrating its relevance in our personal lives." He writes, "We then become our best argument for persuading others to join us. And we're empowered to share biblical truth with bold, courageous compassion as we display the fruit of the Spirit to the world." He cites Galatians chapter 5, verse 22. You know the passage by heart. The fruit of the Spirit is love, joy, peace. He says, "Consequently, you and I need to seek nothing less than a daily, intimate, personal experience with the risen Christ." He writes, "Substituting a religion about Jesus for a transforming relationship with him is a deception of Satan himself." That bears repeating. Substituting a religion about Jesus for a transforming relationship with him is a deception of Satan himself. What he's basically saying is that there really is no such thing as a kind of a Christianity that doesn't fundamentally change you. And when he says, when we fall into this trap, he points out, we don't seek to know Christ more fully. In Jeremiah chapter 29, verse 13, it says, "You'll seek me and find me when you seek me with all of your heart." He says, rather, we seek to be our own God. He quotes Genesis chapter 3, verse 5, in control of our own lives. So imagine we're not seeking the Lord. We're living our lives as if we are God. He writes, we are inoculated spiritually with just enough of a relationship with God to keep us from experiencing the real thing. Our witness, he writes, is enervated since the world sees no difference between our lives and theirs. He says, in a way, religion is dangerous, which gets to his title. In what way? He says, but not for the reasons post-Christian progressives think. It's not that we're too radical, but that we're not radical enough. Pause and think about that. Especially with the criticism of being a Jesus freak or going overboard or being extreme. Imagine you are extreme if you just simply believe the Bible is true, that what it says about Jesus is true, that the statements that he made in the Bible are true, that he really died for sin and not as an example, that he died for sin and he rose from the dead. Really, literally, not metaphorically, not figuratively, not as an analogy or an allegory, but a real Jesus lived and died and came back to life in space and time and history. He writes, we should oppose abortion, despite the accusation that we're a part of a war on women. but we must also love women considering abortion and the children we encourage them to bring into the world. He says we should oppose same-sex marriage, despite the claim that we're called homophobic. But we have to also model biblical marriage by rejecting pornography and adultery while loving all people as Jesus loves us. And he talks about the things that we should oppose: abortions, same-sex marriage, euthanasia. He says we should oppose euthanasia despite the claim that we oppose death with dignity. But we also care for the infirmed and honor the elderly. He says we should bemoan the divisiveness of our politicized culture, but we also love our neighbor as ourself, whatever their political position. And so he basically says, and this is so good, here's why today's conversation is so crucial for those living in a broken culture. When you and I experience the risen Christ in daily, intimate, transforming ways, we must tell the world. And again, if you're a stranger to Jim Dennison, you should go to ChristianHeadlines.com, read his article. It's free. And you can go to the Dennison Forum. I do on a regular basis. He basically says, just as Jesus had to pass through Samaria, he's talking about John chapter 4, verse 4, when he says he must needs pass through Samaria because he's going to have an encounter with the Samaritan woman. He says it wasn't just a geographical necessity, but he was compelled by his love for the Samaritan people. And so the Samaritan woman he led to himself had to tell their fellow villagers about him. The point that Jim Dennison is trying to make is that we are passing through our lives. We have divine appointments. You're probably having one right at this very moment, or you're soon to have it. Make no mistake about it, that person that visited with you, the person who's going to visit with you later, it's a divine appointment. He writes, early Christians, when they were filled with the Spirit, had to share the gospel with the Pentecost crowds. When Peter was filled with the Spirit, he had to testify for Christ before the Sanhedrin at the risk of his life. When Paul met the risen Jesus on the road to Damascus, he had to proclaim Christ in the synagogue there. When John met the risen Christ on the prison island of Patmos, he had to give the revelation to the world. He says, we often see evangelism as a duty and a chore. But in fact, we truly experience the risen Christ. We must share him. We can't help it. My friend Bill Fay, who I talk to on a regular basis, in his wonderful book, Share Jesus Without Fear, says, the gospel of Jesus is good news. You want to share it with every person you know and every person you meet. And the New Testament gives you a natural, non-threatening way to share your faith in Jesus. I love the principles that he outlines in his wonderful book, Share Jesus Without Fear. I might share some of them with you. 303-873-1935 is the number if you'd like to join me on the program. Love to hear from you. 303-873-1935. I'll be back. Hey, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You probably heard in the break about what's happening in Haiti, and I just wanted to make a couple of comments about that as well. A number of different outlets are reporting that, including NPR, including BBC, including a number of different outlets. Basically, the president of Haiti has resigned. The BBC is reporting that it's descending into anarchy. It really has become a kind of a pirate state. Literally, the whole place is ruled by gangs and gangsters. And again, heavily armed gangs attack the National Palace. They set part of the Interior Ministry on fire with Molotov cocktails. There was a sustained attack on the international airport, which remains closed to all flights. And he was turned away from also the Dominican Republic. Remember, they share the island of Hispaniola. And so Mr. Henry was stuck in Puerto Rico, unable to set foot in his own land. And the Haiti, of course, borders the Dominican Republic. It has about 11.5 million people. And so its land area is about 27,800 square kilometers. Now, what that means, it's slightly smaller than Belgium. It's about the same size as the state of Maryland. The amount of land that burned in Texas recently in the wildfire was greater than the entire land mass of, if you will, of that area. And again, the country's faced chronic instability, dictatorship, natural disasters, which leaves it the poorest nation in the Americas. We were live on the air in the weeks and the months following the earthquake in 2010, which killed 200,000 plus people, damaging the infrastructure and the economy. A United Nations peacekeeping force was put in place in 2004 to help stabilize the country, but even they withdrew in 2017. And their former president, Jovenel Moise, was assassinated in his own bed. And so the situation is amazingly bad throughout the country. At the State University of Haiti Hospital, the BBC and a number of different other outlets are reporting. There are people in there, but there's no medical staff. The BBC is reporting a dead body covered by a sheet swarming with flies lies next to a bed with patients desperately trying to get help. There are no doctors. According to one patient, they all ran away last week. They said, "We can't go outside because of the explosions and gunfire. There's no prime minister. There's no government. And the gang's power over the capital? Absolute. They control more than 80% of Port-au-Prince. And there is a very famous, notorious gang leader named Jimmy Barbecue Cherizier. And he's disgusting. I mean, this place has turned to hell on earth. The most merciful thing that could be done is it becomes a protectorate. What I would suggest is that France goes in, occupies the country, and cleans it out. 303-873-1935, that's the number. If you want to join me on the program, 303-873-1935. You know, this country, of course, has notorious ties to voodoo, but also there has been a concentrated effort to reach this place with the gospel. So why has it been so stubbornly recalcitrant? And, you know, this is a tough question Tuesday, so maybe I'll talk a little bit about voodoo. 303-873-1935. I was born in New Orleans, and voodoo is popular in Louisiana and the Caribbean and Haiti and New York. So voodoo is a name for several religious practices derived from West African voodoo. So the original West African voodoo is a polytheistic religion called Voudon. It's spelled Voudon, like V-O-D-U-N or V-O-U-D-O-U-N. And sometimes the last syllable isn't pronounced, like voodoo. And so the religion honors a god with a dual nature. So this god, which isn't a god at all, but in their view has both masculine and feminine, and then spirits that rule nature, as well as spirits in rocks, rivers, trees. And these spirits are called the Voudon or the Voodoo. And so the form of voodoo also includes animal sacrifices and ancestor worship. And so there seems to be this entrenched wickedness. Voodoo in Haiti, in Louisiana, as well as in Miami, New York, is derived from this West African voodoo. But then it became blended with superficial aspects of Roman Catholicism. And this came about when the slaves were brought to the New World and then pressured to convert to Roman Catholicism. Now, you have to remember that Haiti got its independence in 1804. Can you believe it? We received our independence in 1776. Haiti overthrew the French control and established itself as an independent country. But it's never, ever been healthy. But prior to its overthrow, it was one of the richest colonies in the New World. So they mixed West African voodoo with Roman Catholicism. They formed this underground type of voodoo that was found in Latin America, Cuba, Haiti, Louisiana. And in Cuba, this blend came to be called Santeria. And those of you who are listening who are of Hispanic origins, you probably are familiar with Santeria, because Santeria also made its way into much of Mexico and Brazil. But there's other words that are used to describe it. In Haitian voodoo, worship is directed to the Loa, deities who serve the one God. And then the Loa become associated with the Catholic saints. This is deeply, deeply entrenched in the culture. So what's going to happen to Haiti? I don't know. I have no idea. 303-873-1935. That's the number if you want to join me on the program.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
with in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.